Hello, welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Maddie B. We had a hell of a national championship game last night, so I'm putting that before the NHL playoffs just because I know we're going to spend more time on the playoffs talking Penguins here in a little bit. But Virginia's able to get it done. I had them pegged as one of the biggest chokers in college basketball. They finally get the monkey off their back. I mean, it's been decades of them having a top program or similar. You can go back to the Ralph Sampson days. They kept showing him on the sideline in the 80s where they would get upset. Then they have, he was either a 70s or 80s. Then all the way up through. Last year, they lose to a 16 seed, and they finally get it done. It was almost like I didn't know who to root for, but I didn't want Texas Tech to win. And it felt so good seeing them lose in overtime, just the way they treated Mike Leach. Nothing against their basketball program, but I just wanted the admins to suffer because he's still struggling to get his pay. And you know that they're never going to pay him what they owe him because they really didn't fire him for any reason. So I'll throw a little football in there. Texas Tech fired Mike Leach before, like, the social media shitstorms that hit today. It was before that was cool. They went ahead and took that, basically almost a slander case, and fired him, and then they didn't have proof. And so I love it whenever they're struggling in football every year. And I mean, I know he has no connection to the basketball team, but for that reason, I was cheering for Virginia last night. Did you watch the game, Matt, and what did you think?
I watched the first half, and the first thing that kind of aggravated me is, With as much hype as March Madness gets, could they possibly make the game any later, any more in a spot where you really don't want to watch it? I thought you could have made it, like, for as much hype as it gets, why not play it on a Sunday, or why not play it Saturday evening where you know you're going to get that prime time spot? You play it on a Monday, and you lose a chunk of the fan base for the casual fans like me. Did I watch a little bit? Yeah. But was I going to stay up for the whole game? No. Because it was two teams I really didn't care about, and it is what it is.
Oh, I 100% agree. I thought the same thing. I think Charles Barkley even called out the amount of commercials and things. Look, you start the game at, what, 9:20? That's a joke. I don't know if you're trying to attract a West Coast audience, but it doesn't work. Most of the population in the United States is on the East Coast. So you start it at 7 or 8. I don't mind the Monday night game because, you know, it's kind of unique. Sunday, there's always stuff to do, like spring's opening up. You want to be outside. Monday night, you're back at work, you had a tough day or whatever. Relax, watch a game. But if it's on so late, I mean, I stayed up. I think it ended around midnight. And for people that work and have to wake up at like 5, 4 in the morning, like, it's almost impossible for them to watch it. So I can see where you're coming from. The Saturday night games, I think, is where they try to get their ratings, like for the big Final Four. And to be honest, I almost forgot that they were even on. Because if you don't keep an eye on your bracket, which my bracket was busted way back when. I don't think like a lot of these people have this Final Four. Michigan State came out. I thought they were going to be able to push it through with Cassius Winston. Didn't happen. Texas Tech takes them down. Then you had the whole Auburn-Virginia debacle. It's almost like they are trying to make the games hard to watch. Because if you're going to throw so much replay in the last couple minutes, but yet you still have calls that could end the game and basically impact it. I think the big call in the Auburn game was the Virginia player dribbled off his foot, and it should have been double dribble. These are your best refs out there. Anyone watching at home could have seen it, and they let him keep dribbling. He picks up the ball, and I think the rule is the defender has to touch it. So anyone watching would say, okay, that's a double dribble. For whatever reason, they don't mention it in the game. There's a couple seconds left at that point. Virginia keeps the ball. They drive in. And I think he's fouled on a three-pointer, which was also questionable because when the shooter kicks his legs out and flails around, I don't think you should reward that. I understand that he might have prevented him from coming down, and I really only saw the one angle because for whatever reason they don't replay it. But it's almost like they're picking and choosing to make these games just hard to watch. Like, I shouldn't be thinking, man, did the ref just sway that game? Like at the end of the Auburn game? Or even last night, too, there was a call. It was in overtime. Texas Tech had their chance to win in regulation, I understand. I think they're down two. Their guy makes a steal, Texas Tech. He's dribbling down. And he's fouled. Okay, the Virginia guy runs up behind him, hits his elbow. And this is the number one thing that I hate about the replay. Another Virginia player is running down to cut him off. As he's already fouled, he kind of loses control of the ball. The other Virginia player is able to knock the ball out of bounds. So as you're watching the play, you think, okay, Texas Tech's ball, they didn't call the foul, whatever. So they replay it, Matt. And I don't know if you saw the replay on Twitter or anything. It's a slow motion replay. The Virginia guy hits the ball because the Texas Tech player is kind of off balance. He hits the ball, but it's still in the Texas Tech player's hand. And by rule, it was touching like his pinky, barely last. And so they gave the ball to Virginia. And if you're watching the sport, and I understand that that's the rule, but as a casual fan, you cannot be winning fans that way. Because I think whenever it's a foul call, the hand is the extension of the ball. They need to make it the same for these inbounds and out of bounds calls. Because the defender's always going to be able, when the guy's dribbling, if he swats up, he's always going to be able to hit it off the hand of the guy dribbling. And what, you're just going to start rewarding the defense every time? Like, if I was a coach, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't tell my guys, hey, just start swatting the ball up off the dribble. Instead of, you see them reach in all the time, but in the last 2 minutes, just start popping the ball up, try to knock it off the guy's hand. Because that's exactly what happened. And that's all I thought about the entire time. I thought, wow, this is going to be Virginia's ball based on the rules, but it should be just like shooting. The hand should be part of the ball. If it touched his elbow or his knee or if the guy swatted it off his own face or something, yeah, I get that. But if it's just still touching his hand when the Virginia guy clearly knocked it out of it, like, just make the right call. It doesn't make sense for the sport, and it has to be hurting the casual fan. And that's the last thing. I don't want to harp on the refs, but it's almost frustrating to watch whenever you're not a big basketball guy. And like you said, Matt, what would make you want to stay up to watch the game? Every time a team gets on a run, they throw in 13 commercials. And it's just brutal. The game's already long enough as is. Throw the commercials up or start doing it like soccer and just showing them on the split screen and stopping the game.
Well, that was one of the things that the AAF did with their games was that they just showed, if they were going to show a lot of those commercials, they didn't take a break in the action. They just went cut to the commercials and it made the game flow a little bit better too.
Oh, the thing that annoys me the most is like, I didn't hear it last night, but a couple times in the tournament, you hear, the announcers would get mad because they missed their TV timeout. Like the TV guy needs a break. He's like, oh, we should have been in a break here at the 8-minute mark. Or like 13-minute mark, where's the TV break? I'm waiting on it. It's like, dude, no fan should be hearing that. You're supposed to be commenting on the game, not talking about what forced TV timeouts you need. And if they're going to have the TV timeouts, then cut the coach's timeouts down to like two. Two per half. If you're already getting two or three built-in commercials, why do you need six timeouts or whatever the number is? Cut it in half. So that's my basketball thing.
Well, I think the other part to your basketball stuff is that it goes in the same direction as when you're looking at some of the stuff that we've talked about with football, where you could have all the extra camera angles and you could devote so much more technology so that you get those calls right. But I think if you're going to go that route and you have all those extra cameras there, you're almost getting the over analysis of the way the game is compared to what the referees are seeing in real time. You know, you can really split those frames down and really get precise with some of the calls if they want to.
Oh, you're right. And that's where I think if you're watching as a casual fan, you didn't care who was winning. I didn't have a dog in the fight. Didn't matter. But I'm watching, and there was a chance that with Texas Tech down two, after this call, Virginia hit some free throws and the game was over. Texas Tech started throwing up desperation threes and didn't, I don't even think they scored again. There was like a minute left or something like that. But as I watched it, I thought, wow, Texas Tech is getting screwed right here because number one, they didn't call the foul and they called it. It should have just been Texas Tech's ball. Now you're going to go to replay and you're going to doubly screw them because on the replay, you can't call the foul, even though that's what started this whole train wreck. Because the Virginia guy runs up behind him, clearly swats him right in the elbow as he's dribbling. And then, to top it off, there's like a weird slow-mo angle where it's the ball still looks like it's hitting his pinky, so you give the ball to Virginia. It's almost like, wow, Virginia just got away with some cheap-ass stuff right there. And it screwed Texas Tech.
Well, you see that call, but then you miss the double dribble that happened right before it that's not reviewable and can't be addressed.
And that's what I mean. Go ahead.
By showing some of those replays, like, yeah, you may get the call right, but then the stuff that you're not saying is reviewable, it ends up slowing the game down more, and it hurts the overall integrity of what you're trying to go for anyhow.
And it's very simple because you wait and you're watching the slow-mo replay, but if everything was on the table and you want to make the calls right, like the double dribble, Matt, or the foul, just say, hey, we don't have to sit here for 3 minutes while the guy decides if his pinky's on this ball or not, and we're just going to call the foul instead before it, because that's the right call. It should never have came to the out-of-bounds play or like the double dribble in the other game. And it's almost like, and there was one other one, I think it was in the same game last night, and I don't know if this was regulation, but they didn't show the replay, and I looked this up on Twitter. A Virginia guy dribbled down through the lane. He fell on his own. He tripped on his own player. Like wide open, like blatantly. There was no Texas Tech guy even touching him or remotely guarding him because they were in the middle of like a switch. And they gave him free throws. And it was either in overtime when they were down or it was in regulation when they were down. And I thought, like, you're going to have all these weird reviews. If you know that that was a trip and not a foul, call it. Like, reverse it. I don't understand why they don't have the sky judge. That's the best thing that the AAF did. Do you want the games to be officiated fair? You can't say human error and then throw out the replay and have it break the correct call. Like, even if you're not giving Texas Tech guy the free throws, it should still be Texas Tech ball because he was fouled. Just make it that the out-of-bounds call. Why overturn that and hurt them and hurt your product? I don't get it. So, that's all. I mean, basketball, it's over. You had a first-time champ, overtime game. If you're a casual, you watched it, you have to think this is an inferior product to the NBA. And I understand why people say that. And you even have NBA refs bribing the games for how many years? That Tim Donaghy guy or whatever his name was? Fixing the games, you'd really think he was the only one. So, let's get into high tempo. You got anything for us, Matt?
Yeah, just a little bit of college stuff. I know we're going to be getting into this a little bit later, but just something I saw. A&M and Oregon were supposed to be slated to play, and A&M backed out. And not normal for teams to change their non-conference. But then I saw Wisconsin backs out of their series with Washington. And, you know, I worry as the bigger networks and you're looking at teams vying for playoff spots, do you then turn around and take a team like, say, a Duke that's opening the year up with or Alabama that's opening with Duke? You know, are they going to make that non-conference matchup a power matchup because they're two Power Five schools? Or, you know, are they going to continue to knock the schools like the Big 12 or the Pac-12 that try to schedule these other games, these bigger school matchups, and the other team backs out of it?
I I think that it comes down to the 8-game schedule versus the 9-game schedule. The Pac-12 should just go ahead and switch back to the 8-game schedule. And maybe I'm making an excuse here for Wisconsin because I don't know the backstory of the Washington cancellation. But I do know that the Big Ten and Pac-12 have had to cancel a bunch of their games. They were going to do like a Big Ten Pac-12 challenge, sort of what the Big Ten and the ACC does in basketball, when they both had 8-game schedules. So like they all have had games lined up. And then for whatever asinine reason, both conferences decided to go to a 9-game schedule when the Big 12 did. So this is a few years ago. And it took a while for it to kick into place. And so now they've been canceling all their interconference games because they're like, well, ridiculous. I'm not going to play. Like, if you're at Wisconsin, you're in the West, okay, it's kind of down. But then you have, what, 2 or 3 crossovers where you're playing Ohio State and Michigan? Like, get out of here. That's nuts. Why would you also throw Washington into that? Like, it doesn't make sense if that's your crossover game. And then they have to go ahead and play. Like, that one year, I'm pretty sure they played Michigan and Ohio State, and then they played Penn State in the conference championship game. Like, just at that point, just give up. And that's when I think that the Pac-12 and the Big Ten need to, right now, redo all their schedules for next year and go to an 8-game schedule until the SEC and the ACC do it, because you're seeing it now. The other big one that they announced was it Clemson in Georgia that was announced? I think we might have talked about it last week. They're saying, yeah, this could be an every year series. Well, yeah, because you only have an 8-game schedule. So your 9th game is actually the USC game. Now you're even with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. So your non-conference looks like garbage outside of that. You might have Notre Dame thrown in there, but now you're throwing Georgia in, and I'm looking at Clemson, and I'm thinking, you guys are crazy. Why are you doing that? Same with Georgia. You already have Georgia Tech. Why are you scheduling Clemson? It doesn't make any sense at all. So what are your thoughts on that?
I keep going back and forth with it, but the one thing that I look at, like, and I'll use the Big Ten as an example. You know, with the side that Michigan has, where they're playing Ohio State every year, they're playing Penn State, or they play Penn State every year, right?
Yep.
So they're playing Penn State every year. They're playing enough of the tougher teams within their conference that I almost see some room where you don't necessarily have to schedule a tougher non-conference schedule, but when the bottom part of your division is including the teams like Rutgers, it's tough to say, well, so you play 9 games, but you're playing those bottom feed, you know, teams from your conference. That shouldn't necessarily pad your slate to become a playoff team. I mean, the bottom line is you win your conference, and you are allowed a seat at the table. You should be at least in the conversation to have a seat at the table, you know, unless you're UCF, and then you can just claim it on your own.
Well, you still have to look at it from all those conferences have awful teams. I mean, everyone's going to be playing down teams no matter who they are. You're always going to have a team that goes basically over in the conference, and that's a joke. And if it's Rutgers now, it was Maryland for a while. But then you can't even say Maryland because then they beat Texas twice. And so then you're like, well, how are we going to rag on the Big Ten? Oh, they play Rutgers. But then that's all you have at a certain point for that side.
Yeah. I mean, I know every conference has those people. But when you push to say, well, we don't have to play a tougher non-conference schedule because we play more conference games. You know, I do have a little bit of an issue with it, because if you're not scheduling, like, it would be one thing if you're scheduling it's mandatory matchups with the top teams in your conference every year. You know, when you're having those crossovers with the teams like in the ACC, if Florida State were to consistently have, you know, Virginia Tech, and they play Miami every year, and they're playing Duke. You know, you're already playing at least once a year those teams from the opposite side. That potentially you play that matchup twice a year. I think that gives you a little bit more weight, having that opportunity to maybe play that team once during the regular season and then may have to have that rematch for the conference championship. I think that gives you a step up.
Well, I mean, it comes down to what is the committee looking for, and right now they don't care about tough matchups. That's the honesty of it.
They do for everyone but the SEC.
Well, I mean, because just if you in win general, the SEC, though. That doesn't matter. Just in general, though, because you have like the Pac-12 getting in that one year when they didn't play anyone. And it's like, are you looking at this? Are you looking at the tough non-conference? Because I forget who Washington got in over. But you're either scheduling it and you're caring or you're not caring. And it might even have been that year that Michigan lost to Ohio State and they had one more loss than Washington. Or maybe Washington. I don't think Washington was undefeated. But they had also beaten Colorado that won the Pac-12. Was it the North or South? So then you're like looking at it and you're like, okay, we're going to let the Pac-12 champion anyway. It's like, then why even do this? Why have the tough schedule to begin with? And if you don't schedule maybe, like, let's say Michigan last year doesn't schedule Notre Dame, are they in? I mean, yeah, the bottom fell off against Ohio State, but then you're there with one loss. So where are you going to be left out? At a certain point, they're always going to look at the loss, no matter what. Doesn't matter who it's to. So until they start doing auto bids, I honestly think auto bids fixes it. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on it before we move on to the NHL playoffs. But I think auto bids will automatically have teams scheduling tougher games, because then they'll want to get some experience before they have to play the Alabama in their division. And they know that if they go ahead and schedule a non-conference with Clemson, that will get them closer to Alabama if they have to face them in the SEC championship. So what do you think of that?
I don't think that would be too bad of an idea. I just think when you start doing it that way and you're looking at the logistics, like, are you looking at scheduling it like just kind of having an open date and then that's going to be populated during the season and treating it that way? Or how would they do that?
Oh, no, I'm thinking that, okay, if I tell you right now that we're going to have an 18 playoff and it's going to be automatic bid, so that if you win your conference, you're in, and then we'll have like one or two at large, every team will be scheduling kind of like what Ohio State and Oklahoma did, because that game doesn't count in the conference. And anyone that thinks that the NCAA, that this won't happen, is lying to themselves. They're falling for the propaganda that these big-time conferences are letting you into, because they want to pick the bigger teams for the playoffs. You really think TCU has a chance? No. They're the same as UCF. They don't give two shits about them. Same with any other lower school. If you're on the bubble, most likely you're going to be left out if one of the big boys is there. And you're kidding yourself. You are kidding yourself if you think otherwise. People kept talking about Notre Dame might be left out undefeated. There's zero chance of that. If they had one loss, I bet they still would have been in last year. And until they prove me wrong, which they won't and they haven't, and I mean, you can look right at the Baylor TCU years that year with Ohio State. Who did they pick in? I mean, you could have had your pick. Baylor TCU, they had zero chance, Matt. Zero chance. So, I mean, prove me wrong, NCAA, but I know you're not going to change it. Because it's all about money for them. The only way to solve it is if you let auto bids have a chance, and then that includes the highest ranked, whatever, non-Power 5 conference like UCF. Or just go to 16 and let all conferences in, which would be even better. But they're too scared to do that because they don't want an FAU getting hot and upsetting an Alabama or someone. Because that would drive everyone right away. Everyone would stop falling for their false narrative that these teams are unbeatable at the top. So, let's go ahead and switch to the NHL playoffs. Penguins play the Islanders. What are your thoughts on that series going in, Matt?
Well, I think I kind of like that matchup because basically it's not the Caps. The Caps are always such a physical series that I think that if there's a chance that they can get through the Islanders, I think it sets up for a better second round matchup. And I think that kind of plays in, it gets them into that mindset of playoff hockey and gets them giving them a chance to get the lineup squared away.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this. I'm really only looking at those two first round games today. I know if you're a listener, you know that we follow the Penguins, so not that big of a deal. But if you're a first time listener, we're going to focus in on that series between Penguins and the Islanders, which I think is a good draw. I agree with you, Matt, because I think we have more top talent. And that kind of shows in the first round. Now, whether Murray plays his best is yet to be seen. But on the other side, I kind of like how the Hurricanes landed with the Capitals. Capitals had the deep run last year, and the Hurricanes have been quite physical this year. So much so that down here, a bunch of people wear around a t-shirt with the hashtag bunch of jerks, because a couple commentators from like the NHL Network or somewhere, and I honestly don't even know where, but a couple commentators saying that the Hurricanes players were just a bunch of jerks out there bullying teams around on the ice. And to be honest, as a Penguins fan, that's what I want to happen to the Caps in the first round. I want them to get beat up a little bit. Think of what happened with us against the Flyers last year. Islanders, I don't think, give us that many matchup troubles. So I'm optimistic. First game is tomorrow, or whenever this comes out. It will be today, Wednesday. So we'll have a good view into that series. But honestly, I think that Capitals-Hurricane series is going to be a great one to watch. And I really hope it goes 7 games unless the Hurricanes can win it, because you always want the Caps out early. Don't want a championship team coming back, because that's the best path. I think the favorites right now are Tampa Bay. So if you're a Penguins fan, you want them to lose. I think on the west side, it's Calgary. But just like Virginia, hey, Canada teams, you got to prove it to me. You haven't won a cup in how many years? Has it been decades? I don't even know. So you could tell me Calgary has the second best odds to win the cup, but I don't believe it. You might as well just cross them off right now, unless they prove me wrong. Because I just like the NCAA tournament, I said Virginia and Purdue, known chokers. And Virginia backed into the championship, so next year, it's just Purdue. If you pick Purdue in your bracket, you were crazy, because they're known chokers. And same with Canada teams in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. If you pick a team from Canada, choking. I mean, Penguins played what? Did they play a team from Canada? Vancouver? Does that ring a bell? Or am I thinking of something crazy? Maybe not. But you're looking at matchups. I like the Islanders matchup. I think the Penguins get it done. Unfortunately, that's whenever you come up against the Capitals. And I think if the Capitals win, I don't think the Penguins beat them. And I hate to say it off the top of my head, but just too much inconsistency on the defensive end. I don't think it's all Murray. I think he has his head issues. I just don't think that there's enough depth back there, and you don't have a second backup goalie. And I don't know where you go from here either. But what do you think? Do you think they can get out of this region in the playoffs?
I want to see how they come out in game one, because I think typically Pittsburgh, I think they play stronger when they come out the gate guns a-blazing. I think when they get their back to the wall, it really isn't their style. They play much better ahead than they do from behind.
Yeah, because they can attack that way from behind, but they're not as disciplined. But go ahead.
It's just like they get a big lead, you know, and I know we've talked about this before. As soon as the Penguins get like a 2-goal lead or a 3-goal lead, it's like you almost start to panic, because you know they're not gonna be disciplined with the puck and end up letting the other team get back in the game. So it's like the double-edged sword, that you want them to score and be aggressive, but then when they get up 3-0 in the first period, it's like they don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, and that's wherever you wish that the defense could just get some stops and not let the bleeding continue. But I don't know. We'll see. It should be a good series because I think that, I mean, at least for Penguins fans, I think the matchup's in our favor, but we'll see what happens. Well, let's go ahead and get into spring football games. You want to kick this off, Matt?
Yeah, Florida State had their Garnet and Gold game on Saturday, and I was pleased with what I saw from Kendall Browse. The offense looked much more focused. They looked more disciplined. They didn't have the penalties that and confusion. I think that transition from pro style with Jimbo to Taggart's last year was really tough for a lot of the players, and I think the Gulf Coast that Taggart runs is very similar to the style that Kendall Browse runs, and I think that you're seeing in year two that the players seemed a lot more they were just playing. There wasn't as much thinking. I think the schemes were similar, so it definitely played to their advantage. Walked away with no serious injuries, and I was satisfied with what I saw.
Yeah, and I like how you described how they had it. They did a draft pick, right, where they have different sides, so you pick.
Yep.
They
had a draft split up the two squads.
And I'll say that that's what I wish every school would do, and I don't know why a lot of them aren't. I think I saw that TCU canceled their spring game because they had too few players due to injuries. But even then, it's just a spring game. You can't tell me that they didn't have, how much you need? Like 40 people? 40, 50 people available? Like, where are the other 30? You didn't take 30 people in your recruiting class. And there's not that many people injured. Like, you could honestly have fun and have a spring game. And I think that a lot of programs that aren't doing it, they are missing out on a recruiting thing. I think Florida State does it perfectly. I went to NC State's spring game over the weekend. They did their split up by offense and defense. And I hated it because you're going to have like a stalemate once the other team, like the number twos, take the field. It's kind of like, okay, here comes some conservative play calling. They're not out there having fun. Where if you do a draft style, you can have some players ball out. And for those that aren't familiar, this is what my proposal would be. Head coach sits it out. He's there for the PR. He kicks it off, has some events, maybe invite some alums, and they do like some events on the side. And I've seen schools do this. Then you have maybe the offensive coordinator against the defensive coordinator, and those are your coaching staffs. And then you mix it up. The head OC and the head DC, they draft coaches first. And then they get together and draft players, starting with like the quarterbacks. So you flip a coin, they pick quarterbacks, and then they go from there. And you just work your way down till you have a whole team. And then you can kind of go out there and have some fun. I mean, your backup defensive coordinator is going to be probably on the other staff against your main defensive coordinator. Then you have the OC against maybe like the wide receivers coach, and you can get some creative play calling that way. The players are there having fun, and then you use it as a recruiting event. There's far too many, and I know Michigan's included this year, that have turned it into a glorified scrimmage. And then they will complain that no one came out. No one wants to come out to watch the players run drills. You already had an open practice. Did a lot of people show up? No. Why? Because you can just watch the same footage that everyone else saw on Twitter on Monday. Once the newspapers put out their footage and they leak the tapes, because they're not even really leaked, they have like a professional guy filming, you can watch the entire practice. So I understand, like, okay, you have a new coaching staff, like Michigan did, and that seems to be the excuse coming out. You have a new offensive coordinator. You don't want to tip your hand. Well, guess what? He came from Penn State. He said in his interview he learned a lot from Moorhead. Everyone knows what Moorhead's offense looks like. He's not going to reinvent the wheel. We talk about it all the time. Coaches just recycle stuff. You got to be kidding me if you think that he's going to run out and throw some groundbreaking stuff that's like Mike Leach or Chip Kelly ahead of its time. It's not going to happen. So have fun and try to use it as a recruiting event. I mean, Ohio State's going to do it great again. They do it great every year. They're going to have 80,000 people. They're going to make an event out of it. They're going to have recruits in the stands. And then all the other teams that aren't doing that, they're really missing the boat. And I'm not just calling out Michigan with this. I'm saying any big school, Pitt, make it an event. People might not show up at first, and you might have to start to build that in grounds. But if you're having a fun event, your goal is to get hometown kids on campus. Kids that are maybe like 3 hours driving distance around Pittsburgh, down through Pennsylvania and up through Ohio, Cleveland area. They can drive in for a Saturday if you get some, I think Les Miles has like Rick Ross, the rapper, doing like something at Kansas's spring game. That's why that guy won a national championship. Because he knows exactly what to do. You bring some guys in, you get some hype for your game. Will people show up at Kansas? I don't know, but Matt, if you had a choice and they're going to have like some musicians, a bunch of food, some tailgates, all kind of other events, like get the cheerleading squad down there, dance team to do like some dance offs and stuff. Would you go to that one or would you go to a glorified scrimmage?
I like the way that I have been seeing it, where you do the game, you do the fanfare, you do all that stuff. It's the fan in me likes that. The coach in me would rather the glorified scrimmage, where you want to survive and you don't want to put your kids in unnecessary situations to get hurt. So I can kind of see that, because there was a school that I know of that did a full, like on at a high school level, did a full team scrimmage and knocked 5 or 6 starters out. Like that sets the table for an absolutely horrific year, because you just playing physical football and just smashing into people and causing all kinds of unnecessary injuries.
But Matt, it's spring. They have the entire year to get ready. And guess what? They're going to be hitting people in the fall. So you're going to have freak injuries no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I like with the spring practices is that I think that if you have your, especially now that there's the early signing period, when you have the kids that are already committed, like the Sims kid that's committed to Florida State now, he was really heavy leaning on some of the other kids trying to recruit them to the school. I think that's what it helps, because you have that game like atmosphere that the recruits can see what the stadium's going to be like on game day. And yeah, it's going to be a smaller amount because you're not going to get, you know, a full sellout right now with the transition that a school like Florida State is, but you get that feel for the stadium and what it's like on game day, that you may attract some higher level talent.
And that's exactly what I meant by making it a recruiting event. You get guys that are going to bring their buddies out. Hey, we should come see the spring game. And what Pitt needs to do, Pitt rolled out the new uniforms. Why not roll that out on like a great spring game where you're having a big competition, you have a barbecue, whatever else you're going to throw out there, and try to get people on campus having fun. You draw some people in, because this is a long con, because a lot of coaches don't stick around this long. But hey, if you make the spring game a family event, NC State had like a kid zone, which was great. You bring your family, you go to the kid zone. Guess what? The kids are going to start to be fans of that school, whether it's football related or not. They might not watch one lick of that game. But then when they get a little bit older, hey, is there going to be like a NC State football game? Can I go to it? And then you're drawing the kids in, because this is like a free spring game event where you're building fans and you're bringing the younger generation along. I mean, if you're a big school like Michigan, like what family is going to pay a couple grand to take like their young kids when everybody needs a ticket in the Big Ten? Like, you can't take an infant in a carrier and have them stand in your seat. You need to pay another $500 for a ticket for them. So how is that kid going to become attached to your school through events like this? And if it's a glorified scrimmage where they're bored out of their minds and they're like, this isn't a football game, Dad. And they're like, well, too bad. We were scared one of our players is going to get hurt. And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, there's only like 1,000 people here. I mean, you can use it to your advantage, and that's what schools need to do. Make it a big event and take advantage of it. So I'm just disappointed.
But you got to do it the right way too. Because,
go ahead.
But you look at like a school like Pitt that shares their facility with the Steelers. They have to make sure that if you're going to do the big time event, that you do it at Heinz Field. so that you draw the stadium and you draw the players. Miami has their spring game, I think, this weekend. They're playing at a high school field in Miami. That Pitt's done that before, and I think it's an ugly look that you're going to bring in these recruits to play, and then you're going to show them the high school field that probably the majority of them are going to play on during the season. So it's like there's no bells and whistles. They're saying, yeah, they can stand on the field. They'll be on the track. It'll be at a high school game. So,
well, if we're being honest,
Miami,
what is Heinz Field being used for right now? Why wouldn't they be able to have it there? I mean, that's what,
if they're doing field maintenance because of all the Whippeal games, all the
Matt games that took place months ago, and they can plant grass because it's still snowing. There's a snowstorm coming across the country. They're gonna have to replant that grass anyway. Pitt just needs to pony up. It's all about the money, Matt. You know why? Pitt Athletics don't want to pay for that extra field maintenance. And guess what? It shows whenever you can't recruit and your team's not as good because you're not paying for that chance. You don't have your own stadium. I mean, you cheaped out, went for the Steelers route. But I bet if Pitt came to him and said, hey, we'll pay for the maintenance, but we need to have our spring game here. And hey, if you want to do some Steelers stuff, like that'd be cool because we want to make it an event. You think the Steelers would pass up an opportunity for free publicity right before the NFL draft? Like, are you kidding me? Oh, they're in the news for all the wrong things, which we're going to get into now. They're in the news for Mr. Big Chest and Juju. Antonio Brown's calling out Juju Smith-Schuster on social media for no reason. He's like bringing up old posts about like the Steeler of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, whatever. And he commented on how Juju fumbled in the biggest game up to the playoffs. He's unhinged right now. And then Juju came back and was like, hey, I didn't even say anything to this guy. I don't know where this is coming from. And Antonio Brown started leaking like messages he had from when Juju was at college, telling him that he looked up to him. And I was like thinking, what is this doing? What is the point of this? Like, Matt, could you imagine if you had a coworker that, like, I mean, you could say that he lost you the game, but Antonio Brown, you had how many years as the Steelers to bring home a Super Bowl championship?
He didn't even play, the dumbass.
Matt, he didn't even win a championship while he's here. So how is he any worse than Juju? I mean, there's been playoff games where he didn't show up.
I think it was all about the money. He leveraged his way for the big contract. And now he's going to have the money, but he's not going to have the fame that's going to go along with it, because for as much as we're on the bandwagon of Gruden succeeding in Oakland, I don't know with that kind of ego that they're bringing in, I don't know that Gruden can contain it. I mean, I know he did with Keyshawn, but it's to be seen with this circus that Brown's bringing. It could be a completely different animal than what he was trying to deal with at Tampa.
Oh, I think he's totally losing it. I don't think it had anything to do, like, even his comments now. I think a lot of it just has to do with jealousy. And I think that's clear. Because the Juju thing has nothing to do with money. Has nothing to do with stats. He's jealous of him getting all the Steelers off. Guess what? Raiders fans, there's a reason why they keep bouncing around to different homes. Because once they start losing, no one gives a shit about the Raiders. No one cares in LA. So what's Brown going to do when, I think Oakland is slated at 6 wins over under in Vegas? What happens if they have a 4-win season next year? I mean, do you think he's going to be being on ESPN? He'll be doing all kinds of TV shows trying to get his name out there still, because he'll need the publicity. So Juju, ignore that guy if you're listening out there, and make him more jealous by making the playoffs. Because there's a good chance Steelers right now picked at 9 wins over under, same as the Browns. The division looks tough.
I think that would be the greatest burn. Ben and Juju win a Super Bowl and just flaunt their rings. Be like, Bill and Brown, hey, how'd that big contract work for you?
You know what would even be better is if they, like, the Steelers sent them some merchandise. You know how they do that with, like, staffers that help build their team out? And I know it's like some NBA teams have done that in the past. Like, just send them like a care package of like some Super Bowl hats and shirts for their families, and say like, hey, you guys, we were really close, Bell and Brown, whenever you guys weren't here, and we were able to get it done as soon as you left. Probably not related at all. Probably no locker room issues at all. I don't think so. But this is going to be crazy. At this point, it's crazy to see sports writers. I honestly saw a guy, was it on M Live? It's like one of the Michigan newspapers, for no reason, had an article about this, talking about how Antonio Brown won. What did he win? He posted some old messages. Like, what does that mean that he won? Like, was there a battle? Juju didn't say anything. He didn't even come back at him. So it's just weird that some people are, like, getting off on this. Strange all around.
Well, to me, the thing that's weird is that as Brown was trying to leverage for the contract, everyone sided with Brown and said how Roethlisberger was a bad guy and how he's this victim. And now, like, the more that Brown just comes unhinged and is doing this stuff to Juju and, like, just attacking him, it makes absolutely no sense. And then you're not seeing the media aggressively going back and saying, you know, maybe we were wrong about Roethlisberger. Maybe we were wrong about some of these other people in the locker room. Maybe the cancer was Brown, and it was a smart move that Pittsburgh got rid of him when they did.
Oh, it's 100% Brown. And I think you're seeing the same thing happen in Green Bay. They threw out their scapegoat coach, which, I'll be honest, I still want to get rid of Tomlin. If he doesn't put up this year, you're basically riding out Tomlin with Roethlisberger, and they're tied together. That's quite a disappointment. Almost the same level as Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. But now that McCarthy's gone, Aaron Rodgers has to put up. And everyone's getting on him about the locker room, because guess what? Whenever you're doing 100 All-State commercials, you're not a good team player whenever you're not winning that locker room. I mean, anyone could see that he's out there with like two or three of his buddies in these commercials, Clay Matthews or whatever. And if you're above the team, look what the media is doing to them right now. It's glorious to watch the Packers' downfall. Oh, not only because they beat the Steelers in that one Super Bowl, you can get lucky and win a Super Bowl, but it's just interesting to see what could have happened to the Steelers if, I mean, it's kind of already happening from the internals. They're pushing it out. They kept the coach. They're trying to rally the troops. Green Bay, on the other hand, pushed out the coach, and now all the locker room issues are up in the air. You have a new coach come in with all these egos. They're not going to be able to corral it. So they're going to be the team to watch. I saw some people, I think we were trying to get pick'ems from some people for Southbound Sports here, and some people were talking about the Packers, but I wouldn't touch that over-under. No way. Not until you see them play, because if that locker room is a mess and the head coach can't get it, it's going to be a brutal season for Packers fans. Let's shift some football gears here. XFL announced their rules as we're closing in on the end of the show here soon. And I'll be honest, I was a little weary about some of the XFL stuff after the way the AAF ended. Because for whatever reason, the AAF got better press. And I think it might just be because CBS had bought it, compared to the first time the XFL came around, NBC bought it. And if you watch any sports, you know that NBC is awful. They're basically ruining the NHL. You can't really watch any games. Notre Dame broadcasts are way down. And for whatever reason, Notre Dame's probably going to extend with NBC. And I think that it's just a dying channel to hitch a ride to. So I'm hoping the XFL this time can go around and find a better media partner, because I think that's what the AAF did right. They had CBS. They should have pushed harder to make it on CBS, the main channel. Now that we know it was kind of just like a get-rich money scheme, I think the XFL can take the advantage of that. So here's what we got. They have extra points. Teams can choose whether to go for a one-point conversion from the two-yard line, a two-point try from the five-yard line, or a three-point attempt from the 10-yard line. And the commissioner of this league is Oliver Luck, who helped keep WVU. He helped build them up. This is Andrew Luck's dad, by the way, for people that might not know. He built West Virginia up and was able to get them in the Big 12 when they were almost left behind. He did such a great job at that school that he was then promoted to like head of like the NCAA or something. So he knows a little bit about managing big time athletics. So now you have him in charge of the XFL, where the AAF, people in charge of that were like television network guys. They weren't athletic guys. They had no example, no idea of how to run a budget, no idea of any of that stuff. So I feel a lot better having Oliver Luck in this position. And he said the idea behind the extra point was it makes it more interesting and a lot more strategy into play. And I agree with him because you could potentially have 9 points a touchdown. Do you try to build a big lead by going for 9 points, your first two touchdowns and taking an 18-0 advantage? Do you play it safe and go for the two-yard play where you're just lining up power and punching it in? It didn't say anything about kicks, so I don't know if you can do like a one-point kick, which I would hope that they would keep some of that. But I don't know. Maybe they're not even having kickers, which would be another interesting twist. Back in the old day where the quarterback was also the kicker and he had to do like the drop kick or whatever, but we'll see. The other rule that was interesting is they're testing out some ideas for overtime, and I don't know if this one's set in stone, but their idea is to do a shootout very similar to soccer where each team gets 5 plays similar to 5 penalty kicks from the 2-yard line. If the offense scores, it's 2 points. If the defense makes a stop, they get a point. And they want to do it, and this is where it might be a little bit weird because they want to have both teams, offense and defense on the field at the same time in the opposite end zones. So like, let's say the Steelers are playing the Ravens, and this is my example. Steelers offense is down on one side of the end zone going against the Ravens defense. They run a play first. They score, they get 2 points. Then right away is how I read it. The Baltimore offense on the other side of the field, they line up, run their play against the Steelers defense. Let's say they score, it's 2-2. And then it goes back and forth 5 times. After that, they just keep going back and forth until one of them wins. Both defense get a stop. That's 1 point. I mean, you can alternate back and forth. Excuse me. To try to make your way to get in front of that. So I want to get your thoughts on that, Coach. What do you think of those rules that they're pitching this week?
I like them. I think that it seems fair. It seems like it would keep players safe. A little bit of strategy is definitely helpful, especially if you're a team that can convert your extra points. I think that's going to make for more interesting games, especially for some of those ones that are tight down the stretch, that if you get a late score and you can get a 9-point swing, that should be able to tighten some games up as well.
What do you think about the overtime rules?
Yeah, I mean, it eliminates the you had one possession. You know, you have a chance to really have the best team come out on top. You know, a couple different series. I don't see how anyone could complain about that.
And the idea behind it, from what I've read, is they are pushing really hard to make sure that all games are under 3 hours. So they've been clocking. I don't know if they've been like watching films or what they're doing, if they're actually having scrimmages with players. I don't know if they have anyone signed or not. But they've been clocking it to see how long the overtime would take. And they're saying that they can get it done in like 5 minutes or something. Excuse me, but we'll see what happens.
The only thing that might take a bit of time with that, though, is having the referees go from one end of the field to the other.
I don't know if they're going to do that, though. Like I thought about it, maybe they have the sky judge, or maybe they do a modified crew of only 2 men on each side. I don't know.
That would be the only thing that I think you would have to. You would definitely want them to have the full crew, and you'd want them to be able to judge. And if it means having them, you know, jog down to the other end, then so be it.
Yeah, but I think that would take up time, and then the refs would be out of, like, they'd be tired. They'd basically have to do 10 or more 100-yard sprints, right? There'd be 10 plays at least.
Well, if they do 3 and 3, you're looking at 600 yards.
I mean, I guess maybe I'm wrong, and they're just going to do five offensive plays in a row, and then the other team switches to five offensive plays and not alternate. But I thought the reason they talked about alternating at the same time was to eliminate like the stoppage in between the like the play clock. Like as soon as the other team was done, camera angle switch, which is another thing too. You have to get the camera in place and they're ready to go on the other end of the field. But I don't know. You have anything else for the XFL or any football related stuff?
No.
I did have one other thing that I forgot to put in for high tempo. But because AAF was canceled, FanDuel, and I'm hard on some of these fantasy like gambling things, they paid out all future winners. So anyone that bet on the national champion of the AAF or whatever it's called, because it's not the Super Bowl champion, but whoever their champion is, they paid out. If you picked Orlando Apollos, they paid you as a winner. So like let's say it was like double your money. That you got the winnings. And I think they paid out everyone else too as kind of like a draw. So Eddie, if you put your money in, you at least got your money back for anyone that bet futures. And I thought that was a nice move because the gambling, like what do you really have? I mean, you're giving the money back, but they're still going to pay out winners. Good PR for them. Kind of like an FU to the league. Like, hey, you're not going to finish. We're going to crown your champion for you. A random bookie. Could you imagine? It's almost like going back to how national champions were claimed back in the day. Or like UCF. They're like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to pay you out as national champion. And I don't even know what happened with UCF. Did they pay them out as national champion? Because they show up in the NCAA, like the national championship book. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. I don't remember. I don't remember ever seeing a story like that. But that would be good to see. What are your thoughts on that?
I give them credit for paying it out because they definitely didn't have to. They could have just called it a draw and just refunded money.
I think they said kind of it might have been a dig at the AAF, but they said that the total combined payouts were under 10 grand. So maybe not that many people bet on it in the first place.
Well, I would probably agree with that because within the first 2 or 3 weeks, there's no way you were going to really know unless you were just planning, unless you were in one of those cities and invested into like wanting to go just because there's nothing else going on.
Or you just made the common sense call like I did and knew that Steve Spurrier was the best coach in that league and he was going to get it done. Apollos, baby. I want to know when they're going to give me an Apollos championship t-shirt. I should email Coach Spurrier and see.
You're going to have to get it made yourself. We'll have to put it up in the store.
No, there are big discounts. There are big discounts on their merch because they're letting it go or whatever. But, I mean, a lot of those players were being signed. And the funny thing was, a lot of the NFL guys were saying, like, well, these guys in the AAF, they're not good enough for NFL rosters. And then immediately, like, a ton of people from the league were picked up. So, full of it. But we'll see. I did have the mailbag on here. Well, let's see. As I'm dying from allergy season, so I apologize if any of that's getting picked up on the mic. But, we have a mailbag came in. Will Derek Carr return to MVP form and help John Gruden get the Raiders on the right track with Antonio Brown this year? Matt, what are your thoughts on that?
Was that MVP form?
Yeah, they said MVP form.
Did he win the MVP award?
That was exactly my response, Matt. No, he never did.
So then he can't return to a form that he was never in the first place. But if he's working out with Mr. Big Chest, then there's a good chance that maybe he could return to – he could earn MVP awards. Because MVP awards, he's going to have – I bet if things go to plan, he's going to have the stats, but he might not have the wins. It'll be like he'll throw for 500 yards in a loss. So he could potentially do that.
Yeah, I don't think that he'll get MVP. And I'm kind of down on the Raiders right now. Because you're introducing a cancer. I mean, look how good Amari Cooper did as soon as you got rid of him with the Cowboys. He looked like a world beater. Now you're putting Antonio Brown out there? Nah. I don't see it. I mean, I know the Steelers lost to him to keep us out of the playoffs, so it's a little bit, I'm a little bit bitter about that, but other than that, I don't see it happening. I'm not high on Derek Carr. He could always get injured. Isn't that his big problem?
I think his problem is he's in Oakland.
But he has a quarterback. What is that show that he used to do, Gruden? The quarterback club or whatever?
Yeah, his quarterback camp.
Yeah, quarterback camp. So he should be able to fix him up, right?
One would think.
But, all right. That's it for all our football talk. Let's get into the final bell. Matt, you got anything for this week?
Not too much for the final bell. Just support the podcast. Check out our website. Get on there. Buy some clothes. It's good quality stuff.
Yeah, and I think we pretty much hit. We had a good variety of stuff coming up. We have the NHL playoffs. We'll see how the Penguins do whenever this hits out in this opening round. And you have a lot of like the Pirate stuff going on. I didn't really mention baseball, but baseball's back in full swing. And I thought the Pirates are going to be battling for the end of the division. But then,
they did have that good brawl the other day.
Yeah, with the Reds, and the Reds are so bad that you really don't think that anything's going to happen. And then, surprisingly, Detroit Tigers, friends of the show, they're off to a hot start. And they were picked to be a complete rebuild. So if I have to sit and watch the Tigers accomplish more than the Pirates this year, I don't see how any other fan could honestly say that Bob Nutting is going to have any long-term success. Stadium was basically empty. I think I went through, if you follow us, go to southboundsports.com. You can get a link to our Twitter and stuff there. But they have, I was trying to retweet, and maybe I need to get back on this, but everyone was posting empty seats for the Pirates games. So, baseball's back. Fans are not. What was the thing that you sent me? The hot dogs, they ran out of hot dog buns for a promotion they did already.
Yeah, they had Buck Knight and didn't have enough buns.
I'm telling you, they probably saw, like, okay, well, wow, we only have 5,000 people here. So we don't need that many buns. And then, of course, whenever you go there, you're so depressed because you're watching the Pirates. Like, what else are you going to do except for eat and drink? Concessions, doesn't matter if you only have, like, a couple thousand people, but concessions are probably killing it. So, I don't know. We'll see. Baseball's back. NHL playoffs. It's going to be a busy time. We have some more spring games this weekend. And some NFL draft stuff's coming up. So, like Matt said, go to our website, southboundsports.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast host. If it's not out there, send us a message. And we will be sure to try to get it added to your platform. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.